Welcome back to another episode of the Career Confidence Podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard, and my business partner and co-host, Pamela Caldwell. Pam, amazing to have you here as always.
Oh, I always love getting back in the podcast hot seat, and we've got some interesting topics to discuss today.
We have sat down. Is it the start of a new year now? I mean, it's end of Jan.
I think we can stop saying Happy New Year. Yeah. I said it this morning and I thought, oh, nah. It's still in Feb.
It's done now, isn't it? We're halfway through the year pretty much, no? But it's been a really interesting start to the year, I would say.
Yeah,
And maybe we should just quickly just kick off by addressing that. Interestingly, I feel like this has actually been our busiest January for a long time. Do you feel the same way in terms of the buzz going on?
Absolutely. And it's such a welcome change. Even I've noticed the positivity from the candidate market that I'm speaking to. I feel like at the tail end of last year, everyone was crawling really seriously. People were like, hi, I'm just going, you know, maybe pay up in the new year. And I am just getting a buzz of excitement. But with that, we're obviously on the front lines with our recruitment business as well, that there seems to be a bit of confidence in the market because our clients are reaching out to us, engaging us, and releasing a lot of workforce requirements, programs, projects are getting signed off. So everything seems to really be taking a bit of a positive spin for 2025. So hopefully it's a sign of the year that we're going to have ahead.
I completely agree. And that's why I thought this podcast today was quite timely, because I do think we are about to enter into a few years of a bit of a bull run. I think we have come out of 18 months of a really slow market. If I'm being perfectly honest, I've worked in technology now for 12 years, recruited in it. This is the slowest I've known it up until probably this point. So I am really excited about 2025. And I was sort of doing some research ahead of this podcast about some really key things that are going on in the tech industry right now. Obviously, AI is everywhere. America's just invested $500 billion into funding AI projects. I mean, it is actually insane.
When you put a B in front of it, when you're talking billions, you just can't
We just can't fathom what is about to happen. And then on the flip side of that, there's all these stats coming out around job losses, but the opportunities that are going to come from AI as well, which is why today we want to do this episode around women in technology and why now more than ever, we do actually need to double down when it comes to D&I in tech. And this is quite a hot topic at the moment. And I just think it is not the time to stop investing in this, stop prioritizing this. And look, we come at it from more of a women in tech perspective, okay? Because that's what we can speak to. We're two women in technology. We speak to a lot of women in technology. So D&I can mean lots of different things. But for today's episode, I'm sort of solely focusing on women because obviously we have Sisterhood Club. So this is the sort of, I guess, space that we play in when it comes to D&I. So that's sort of what I think we should talk about today and really sort of go into. So the first thing that I think we should just pull out is some recent data highlighting what's actually going on and sort of how many women are in tech at the moment. So in terms of women in the technology field at the moment, in Australia, this is only 29% of that is actually women in tech. Now, more alarmingly, in leadership roles, that's about 18% are women. Right. So let's just stop there for now. Right. 29% of women are in tech at the moment. We know that AI is about to come hit us like a tidal wave and all of the jobs that are going to come from that are going to be primarily in tech and have some sort of technology component. Then we have a lack of visibility at the top. And I believe you can't be what you can't see because only 18% of the executive positions are held by women. So it's almost like creating a bit of a perfect storm. So if we don't act now, if we don't get these 18% of women that are in these executive roles to step up, to have a voice, to be seen, to be heard, and hopefully we can help give a platform to those women, I'm slightly concerned that we could have a pretty big gap and that 29% could be increasingly getting larger over the course of the next few years.
Can we also, for a moment before we actually even head into it, hold space for the fact that 29% and 18% respectively in tech in Australia. That in itself is progression.
It is.
If you think, I started my career in tech recruitment in 2006, and I honestly was so unaware of the fact that I did not place a female. And I also, I genuinely do not recall meeting with a female hiring manager. I just don't, in the first 10 years of my career. So the fact that we now, we have these stats available to talk to, and there has been progress made, I think that that's awesome, right? It's not where we want it to be. And I think that we constantly need to be having these conversations in order for progress to be continually made. And I think it's, you could go really deep rooted with it as well. It's like, how are we going to start making changes from the grassroots levels? And it is amazing now that in school environments, I've got a daughter that's in primary school. They, every week, they've got STEM programs. And it's even the use of those words, even the use of the word STEM, so that children then are relating the activities they're doing to your science, your technology, your engineering, and your mathematics type subjects. And they're related to very exciting pieces of work. That is what's going to very gently make a shift over time. But that is going to take, that's a generational shift. Mm. We need to see change, and we need to see change now, or we are going to be massively, massively left behind as a nation in comparison to the progress that the rest of the world is going to make.
Completely agree. So here's some more stats just to sort of really drive this home. And I don't know how much research everyone's been doing around AI, but Goldman and Sachs, they predict that AI could replace 300 million full-time jobs globally. Interestingly, a lot of those jobs are in admin and legal, right? Which I thought was very interesting. Okay. Because typically those types of careers can be more female dominated from the stats that I've read. The World Economic Forum, AI and automation may replace 85 million jobs by 2025.
Stop.
Oh, that's this
2025.
Year. Yeah. And then a final one of McKinsey, up to 30% of work hours in the US could be automated by 2030, potentially affecting 12 million jobs, right? I don't know why this isn't like circulating more, and not to create fear, but to create some sort of like perspective of what's actually to come. Okay. So that's the bad, but that is a lot of jobs, a huge amount of jobs, right? But on the positive, because again, I am an optimistic thinker. I like to think, yes, there's going to be some jobs that are going to be replaced, as there always has been when you look at patterns through history and through time. You know, actually what technology has enabled is people to be more productive. It's created a lot more opportunities. It's created a lot more wealth in the world as well. So there's a lot of positives to come. So let's focus on that now. So the World Economic Forum also predicts that it could create 97 million new jobs by 2025, offsetting the 85 million jobs being replaced. Now, I also just want to pause there, because what are those jobs going to be?
Phew. Right? Honestly, yeah. I thought we were heading into the most doomsday podcast.
It's definitely not going to be doomsday, right? Everyone can just take a breath and breathe out. But interestingly, out of those new jobs being created, how many people are going to have to upskill? Right. And this is the piece that we're sort of going to go and speak to. And then McKinsey is also saying that 12 million new jobs could be created. So that's really exciting. And Goldman Sachs said AI-driven innovation could boost global GDP by 7% over 10 years, leading to entirely new industries and job roles. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a whole suite of new opportunities, new jobs created, but that's what I really want us to focus on today, because that's exciting. But we also need to be really aware of what we need to do as women, especially who maybe aren't in tech right now, to ensure that we get a piece of this pie and we aren't left behind. And we're sort of shaking our head, looking around, being like, I've lost my job, now what? Right? I think the more prepared we can be now, the less this is going to impact us down the path. So I guess I did then Google and also use ChatGPT to sort of see what it kind of pulled out about what the skills we need to develop. And the first one was AI and data literacy. So basically understanding AI models and their impact, basic knowledge of machine learning and automation, and decision-making with AI and prompt engineering. Mm-hmm. So again, these are some really interesting things that we can start looking into, upskilling ourselves on to have this basic understanding. So let's just pause there, right? So if you're a female listening to this, maybe you're in legal, maybe you have an admin role, maybe you're in some sort of like marketing or sales job, right? Is it worth it now for you listening to this, listening to all the jobs that are going to be obsolete, listening to the jobs that are going to be created? Is it worth now looking into doing some form of online training, online course to start upskilling yourself in this tech?
Can I honestly say one thing that I actually really hate about the technology industry? And this is another reason that the work that we do with Sisterhood Club is so important. Mm-hmm. I hate how everything sounds so complicated.
I know.
Right? Mm-hmm. If you're not in like a heavy-based tech role at the moment, or you're maybe in more an administrative role, you're not in emerging technology. If you heard that you had to upskill in AI, data architecture, data engineering, machine learning, I would be like, I give up. I'm out. Do you and my friends want to chip in and we'll buy a plot of land and, you know, start a veggie patch? You know, that's the challenge with the entry point into technology as well. And that is why I love that we have all the women on the podcast, all the women that we have as part of the sisterhood community, because it takes all women that are already in the industry to really come together, share their stories and demystify what it actually means to be in tech. I'll pick up on what ChatGPT had sort of spewed back out to you there about potentially prompt engineering, right? Sort of strip that back and make it more
appealing,
mm-hmm. right? If you are a really good writer, even you're maybe in creative writing or something at the moment, you really enjoy English, right? You're really good at writing. That really interests you. Linguistics. That's what that is, you know, mm. but the fact that it's called prompt engineering, it just makes you go, engineering? Oh, I need a bachelor's degree.
Correct.
You know, and it's just really making sure that we peel it all back, we peel the layers back, and we get women to share the stories of how you can, you know, have a really simple segue into these types of careers for the future. Mm-hmm. So that was where my mind was going when all these words were getting rhymed off. Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. And I think that I've interviewed two women. I want to interview more women that have successfully transitioned from being nurses into being infrastructure architects, into being cybersecurity engineers. And it didn't take them a lot because they had so many transferable skills. And that was the other thing that it also said, is that the human-centric skills that AI won't replace. So emotional intelligence and leadership, critical thinking and problem solving, creativity and innovation, right? Like communication and storytelling, how we present ourselves. All of these human skills we also need to double down on. Yes, as a technology side, but also it's like if you've got a gap in, you've identified a gap in your leadership and your communication, this is something that you can start upskilling in as well. Maybe go and do a public speaking course, or, you know, start sort of in like immersing yourself in some really good books, listen to some really good podcasts, put yourself on a training course and learn more about leadership and emotional intelligence. Like these are the things that AI is also not going to replace. And it's the human skills, the human element that is going to be more and more, I guess, prioritized in the workplace, because there's going to be a lot that machines can do, a lot that AI can do, but it's the human element that, well, I hope right now will not be replaced. So also listening to this, if you're somebody that you've got some strengths in when it comes to emotional intelligence, maybe you're a great leader, maybe you're really empathetic, maybe you're such a great problem solver, maybe ideas just flow to you with ease, right? These are the skills that you can really double down on. And then vice versa, if you're thinking, actually, I probably do need to work on my emotional intelligence. I am quite reactive. I hang on to things. I replay things, and I probably...
You're describing me?
No, give yourself some credit, you know. I think you've got good emotional intelligence, but, you know, I think that these are things that we can apply a little bit of self-awareness to and think, this is some areas that I need to work on. So
can I actually just make a suggestion as well? there are not many corporate companies out there that are not sitting up straight and paying attention to what's going on as AI evolves at the moment. Regardless of what organization you're in or industry that you're in, whether it's telco, insurance, legal, whatever, there is going to be some room, somewhere within your organization where there is going to be conversations about AI and how your organization is going to implement it. Put your hand up, put yourself forward and get to that table. Get around that table where all these discussions are going to be taking place. Even if you operate in a non-tech capacity at the moment, get involved and do whatever you can to be involved in those discussions, because going away and doing a course is great, but if you can go on a journey with your current organization where you're involved in these real life situations as your company begins to adopt some of these practices, that is invaluable. And sometimes learning on the go, I'm actually probably someone that's actually better at learning on the go. If I'm thrown into a situation, that's how I've learned, like, throughout my whole career, is just by like watching, listening, learning and doing things in real time. That is amazing exposure to get. So please, if you do your own research within your organization, identify what those topics and discussions are that are going on and ask to be involved. It might be something that you need to do on top of your day job. You might have to put in an extra couple of hours per week, but believe me, it will put you head and shoulders above your peers and it will propel your career and make sure that you are safeguarding yourself and you are future-proofing your career. I think that that is a really, really good action point and something that you can just implement tomorrow.
Absolutely. And I think as well, it's just having that curiosity, like, you know, play around with ChatGPT, play around with Copilot and any sort of automation tools you can get your hands on. And you'll see that they're really easy to use. Like, they're not scary. Like, you know, you can really start to play around with it. And I do honestly really encourage everyone, if they haven't already, to download ChatGPT, to speak to it, to ask it questions, to get a real feel for it, because it is going to be part of our lives now. Like Google is, like, you know, the internet is, this is here to stay. So the more you can understand, the more you can use it, the less afraid you're going to be of it. So that's another key piece as well. But other things it sort of suggested was, you know, Python, as in terms of a scripting language, SQL, data science. So, you know, if you're already in tech, you know, just making sure you're thinking about what you can upskill on, machine learning perhaps, but just not neglecting, you know, your technical skills as well. And if you're not in tech, you know, like, I think data analytics is a really good entry point as well.
And very interesting.
Very interesting as well, if you've got really good attention to detail. And again, like Pam said, these are not scary things. Like, to get into the industry, you don't need a degree. Okay. Like, you know, degrees are going to be so obsolete soon anyway. Like, who is seriously going to go to university now? Right.
Bold statement, but probably
no, it's true, because everything you learn is going to be obsolete so by the time you come out of university. What a waste of money and time. Mm-hmm. Seriously, the education system needs to be shooken up massively. Yeah. And I think it will be. You know, there's always going to be room for degrees, of course, in certain industries, but tech? Nah, you're going to sit and do a tech degree over 4 years and get yourself 50 grand in debt. By the time you come out, everything you've learned is going to be completely obsolete. So do online courses. You know, do put yourself in as many rooms as possible, meet people, network, be in the driver's seat of your own career. So that all being said, right, like, I think, how can we close the gap, right? So I think it's just really, really important to sort of like speak about, like, maybe first and foremost, like, what could be some of the barriers that, like, we've spoken about a few things already, the importance of like those grassroots, right? Like, I love the fact that your girls are exposed to STEM subjects and they're sort of making that connection between, tech is fun, tech is cool. You know, like, when I look back at my school days, like, we had one computer and it was just like, typed your name and it repeated back to you. That was STEM, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I mean, I used to get excited about that, but how freaking boring, really, right?
Honestly, our school had one computer. How ridiculous. And it was called a BBC brand at the time. God. Jesus, this thing. It was hilarious. But thinking back, right, and that's in such a short space of time. I'm only 39. Mm-hmm. I'm hanging on to that 39 with the skin of my teeth. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just, and again, just like to talk to how quickly the tech landscape does change.
Exactly.
Now we're all walking about with, like, you know,
devices. Think how long that's taken, right? Mm-hmm. From dial up to where we are now. Like the speed that we're about to enter into, I don't think anyone can fathom, right? No. And hence why we're having these conversations. But grassroots, we need to think about that. But like you said, we can't wait until all this new generation comes up and is ready to step into tech. We have to act now. So I think that the first thing that I am really, really big on, and we're big on, is the visibility. So if you're listening to this right now and you are a woman in technology, you have a responsibility to speak to your family, speak to your friends, to talk about what you do, to break down those barriers, to be visible, to showcase what a career in technology actually looks like. Because people have this warped idea that it's really hard, it's complicated, they're never going to be able to get into it because they're not smart enough, intelligent, whatever their story is. And you have a responsibility, if you are a female in tech, to break down those barriers and just be like, look, this is what I do on a day-to-day basis. This is what a day looks like. This is what happens. This is how I got into it. And give some guidance and almost like be a mentor and a role model for the women in your inner circle. I think that's what we can all do and take responsibility for. So that's really big. I think for you and I, we want to make sure that we continue to build up Sisterhood Club. We do these podcasts, we get women on the platform, put them on the stages, make sure that we've got some amazing mentors in our Big Sister Mentorship Program as well, because all of that valuable information is going to just drip feed down into other women in technology, and make sure that those leadership roles, you know, are starting to fill up at the top with more women. So visibility is key. It starts at grassroots. And I think every single female in technology has a responsibility to start being more active, more visible, and making sure that they are holding the hands of the people that they know and love to showcase, this is actually what it is. This is what I do sort of day to day, to really sort of break down those barriers as well. I guess another sort of key piece as well is, I'm going to say, get a mentor. You know, yeah. Like I really do believe that if you want to get ahead, maybe you're like thinking, oh, I don't know what the next step is for me. Hence why we run Sisterhood, the Big Sister Mentorship Program. But if you don't have access to that, if you're living overseas or whatever, like there'll be somebody that will be open to being a mentor. So reach out, like make sure that you are sort of like, you know, going onto LinkedIn and connecting with people, going to networking events. Like there's going to be people in your sort of, I guess, inner circle or slightly beyond your inner circle that will be open to coaching you, open to mentoring you. So you have to take action. I think this is really, really key. We can't just sit and be passive and wait for things to happen now. We need to be taking action in our careers, getting yourself out there and really making sure you're speaking out, you're being seen, and you are being visible in your organization. That's so important.
Yeah, it's massively important. And just with that, the whole, you know, just like really trying to encourage our listeners to think about emerging technology. Now, do you know what I love about, I've said what I really dislike, and I think I use the word hate very strong, right? Dislike about tech. What I really love is with emerging technology as well, as these new concepts and ideas and emerging tech comes out, it's okay to be like, oh, I really don't know what that means. Can you explain that to me? And it takes away the embarrassment or that feeling of, oh my gosh, am I going to ask a silly question? It doesn't matter as much. So speak up, be curious, ask people that are in these roles currently and working on the emerging tech projects. Just be curious and get out there and ask the questions. But also something that you could really take action in, perhaps you've got a women in tech focus group within your current organization, or maybe if there's just a group of you that come together to just discuss your careers on a monthly basis, whatever it looks like for you, you could bring to the table a suggestion that why don't you all sit down and in one of your sessions you have a brainstorm around what AI solutions could look like for your organization. How do you think that these emerging technologies could actually propel the success of your organization? If you went out there and you all came together, brought your ideas to the table and come up with a few solutions that you could then take to the existing leadership team, what an amazing way to make yourself a lot more visible in a really positive way. Because here's the thing, even some of the executives in your business will not know where to start with how they are going to implement AI and all this emerging tech into their business to drive real business benefit. So if you bring a group together, or even you might be more of an individual operator, maybe you just something, a little project that you want to give yourself, I would honestly recommend that, because that is also something that you're not only learning, you're not just being curious, but that could be something that could add massive value and make sure that you are very seen and you are very visible in your role. And then that when the opportunities come up, if it's something that's going to be adopted, who's going to find themselves at that table? You.
Correct. And this all just goes back to massively investing in yourself and carving out time in the week. You know, we've all got the same hours in the week, and it's about how we prioritize those hours. Everyone's busy. Everyone's got, you know, busy jobs, busy lives, you know, families and things to think about. But even if you could carve out 2 hours of your week and say, in these 2 hours, I'm going to read this article, I'm going to listen to this podcast, I'm going to do this online course, but give yourself, like, I guess, a goal this year of carving out some time every single week to invest in something new, to read about something, to just be upskilling yourself constantly, because then you're going to be a couple of steps ahead of at least your peers as well. And then you'll be able to offer value to your organization. Like you said, maybe you could put together a women in tech in your organization, or even create a meetup group, you know, and start being a thought leader in your space in this new, I guess, technology revolution. Yeah, correct. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you have the opportunity, but listen to this right now, to do that. So take action. I think that's a key piece that I want to get into for individuals. Don't sit passively now. We have to act. It is literally like imperative that we do. Otherwise, this gap of women in tech is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Let's move on to companies now, right? Let's just end with this, because I think that we've spoken quite a lot about the individuals, about what's coming, but companies do also have a big responsibility to make sure that they are driving their D&I initiatives. They are making sure that they aren't just panicking and getting loads of engineers in. They need to make sure that their recruitment process is free of bias. Okay, now we as Sister Club at CX Solutions are working with some amazing companies that are really doing this. And they are saying to us all the time, we want to see diversity in the shortlist. Why? Because we know as a business that we are creating new products, new services, new tools, and we want to make sure that the team is a representation of the market that we're serving, right? I think this is absolutely key that companies need to really think about, right? If you're designing a new product, a new piece of tech, a new piece of software, right? You're not just designing it for one gender or one race, right? You are designing it for the society that you serve. And let's have a look around. How much diversity do we have in our society? So if you have a technology team that is, let's just say, white male, that is not going to be then, you're not going to innovate. You're not going to create products. You're not going to understand. You're not going to have that sort of diversity of thought and innovation and creativity. This is why you do need to make sure that you are going, you're making the extra effort to think about your recruitment process. Think about, am I getting enough diversity in these shortlists? Am I interviewing just the same people all the time? Or am I interviewing different genders, for example? I think that's absolutely crucial. And I think that, you know, this is why, like, well, DEI is a buzzword. No, you need to actually think about this from a business lens, because you cannot just have one person doing all of the development, all of the innovation in the company and expecting to come up with a really good product. Like, I think that's madness. And that's why I think businesses really need to take this seriously.
Look, I completely agree. And when it comes to like sort D&I from a company lens, I completely respect when organizations really give it a really strong push from a stats perspective to have gender diversity in their shortlists. I feel firsthand, being on the recruitment side, the challenges that can present for certain technology verticals, data science, data engineering, some heavy DevOps positions, although there's some really amazing female talent coming through in that, machine learning, it can be very tricky, which is then where I think an organization has got a responsibility when it comes to the person that is responsible for interviewing the candidates that come through, that they are able to bring a certain level of emotional intelligence to the interviewing process, to be able to see beyond a person sometimes and really make a female candidate feel really comfortable to be able to show up as the best version of themselves. Like I say it day in, day out when I speak with male and female candidates, like often a female will almost talk herself out of applying for a role and I have to drag it out of her and be like, no, look, you have got this. No, you have got this, and draw the attention to the positives. And that is just, it seems to just be such a common theme. So I do think that companies have got a responsibility to make sure that their interviewers, they are the face of their business. They are the touch point with the market, and they have a responsibility to make sure that interviewers have had relevant interview training as to how they can be aware of their own internal biases, because we all have them. We all have unconscious bias, but if unconscious doesn't become conscious, then these biases are something that we're just going to continue, you know, to carry throughout our interviewing process. So I think that's just one thing to really take heed of. Like if you are an interviewer, you have got a responsibility to be able to really bring that emotional intelligence to a session.
100%. I think every single hiring manager should be trained on that. And but also it's like talking, just quickly staying on the talent attraction piece here before we go on to retention. I think, you know, it's making sure that you've got enough of a shortlist in the first place to pick, you know, like, and this is where I think I'm going to give us a bit of credit here now, right? There was last week I had a principal engineer role and I was determined to find a female. And in the principal engineering space for this particular tech stack, there wasn't many, but I thought to myself, no, I am not going to send a shortlist to this client until I have equal representation of females and men. Now, that took me a lot of time and energy and tapping on the shoulders, because women, you know, certainly aren't sitting on job boards applying for jobs unless they 100% the skill set. We know this. But I think it's really important for organizations to really look at who they are using for their recruitment partners and making sure that these agencies are going above and beyond to provide them with a shortlist in the first place. So when the hiring manager does come to interview, they have a variety of people to then select from. Because otherwise it's like the hiring manager's like, well, I've got one female or no females or no diversity here. So, you know, there's no point in me having training because I've got no one to interview. So I think we have to have this proactive approach. And as a tech recruiter myself, I do take this part of my job very seriously, to headhunt for a variety of talent and not just sort of accepting the first few resumes that land in my inbox. And it takes time and it's more effort. But I know that if I don't make that effort, I'm contributing to the problem. And you're right. When I'm speaking to those women, oh my God, it's a completely different conversation. I have to say, you are ready for this role. You are ready for this promotion. Put yourself out there. Okay, you don't tick every single tech stack here, but you've got this, this, and this, and this. But again, I feel responsibility to do that. Otherwise, I could just dismiss a female and not give her the opportunity to sell herself and not give her the opportunity to upskill. And then I'm contributing to the problem instead of the solution. So this is a really big thing that, again, I think companies need to really sort of assess. Are your recruitment partners, are your talent teams going above and beyond to find you diverse talent? Something to think about. And then I guess attraction, let's just sort of talk about this, because there's also stats saying that women are leaving the technology industry. And it's like, you know, we need to make sure that they don't. And this is also coming down to the working environments that they're in. Okay, so let's sort of talk about some things that companies could do to retain their female talent, because once you get them in your business, you certainly want to make sure they've got the career opportunities and they're stepping up into leadership roles. So any thoughts on like a couple of ideas that companies could do?
If you are an organization at the moment that is getting pressure to revert back to 4-5 days a week back in the office, please stand up and be seen and be the voice of reason. I can guarantee you right now, if women are told that they have to transition back into the workplace full time, that those stats will fall through the floor.
Agreed.
Right. And yeah. We have made so much progress. And this is when we need to continually be speaking up and being vocal about these things, because otherwise we're going to go backwards. And that is something that I just do not want to see. If you hire someone, you hire them wholeheartedly, trusting and believing in their ability to execute. If you don't hire them. Anyone that I've ever hired, I have hired, and they get my trust immediately. If you break that trust, you're out. You're gone. Luckily, this only happened once throughout my entire career, but you give the flexibility, give the trust. These things should all be outcome driven. And if you feel that someone isn't performing, that's a whole different discussion. But please, please use your voice within your own organization to be a force for making sure that the flexible working, the hybrid working doesn't dip any further than 3 days a week in office and 2 days from home as a mandate. That's one thing that I want to drive home.
Listen, we talk about it all the time, don't we? We really do have this conversation with our clients a lot. I think hybrid is fantastic. I really do, for mental well-being, for collaboration, for culture. I think a hybrid way of working is absolutely fantastic. I have never been a fan of 5 days in office, but I've also never been a huge fan of fully remote either. I think a blend of both is absolutely perfect and where we should all be aiming for. I think, though, we also need to have, again, some emotional intelligence and think about the human element of this as well. A lot of people moved out during COVID. A lot of people, like we did, we moved to Torquay during that time, right? Now we go into the city, we go into the office 2 days a week, right? But we run our own business, we have that flexibility. If we were working for an organization now, probably you more so than me, you've got two young children, right? If a company turned around to you and said, right, Pam, back in the office 5 days a week, you would be out of there quicker than you could say,
here's my resignation.
Correct, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Point being that they would lose such an asset to their business, because you are an asset to any business.
Oh, I know.
But that's my point. And that's the thing. It's like we have to, if we want to support women, and women do most of the care, right? Like, yes, there's some amazing men that are taking on those roles as well, which is fantastic to see. But the stats still show that women are still primary carers.
Yeah, exactly. But can I also just talk to that stat as well? Not because we have to in a lot of occasions, because we want to.
Yeah.
And we should have that choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is what our parents and our grandparents fought for.
Yeah.
Right. There's not a day goes by that I am not grateful for the generation that I've grown up in when it comes to like my own career and the choices that I've had that my own mother would never have had.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to see that go back.
No.
Women, in a lot of occasions, also want to be the primary carers. I've got a wonderful husband who steps up and we work together as an absolute partnership. But a lot of times there's stuff that I want to do that.
Yeah.
And by an employer taking that away from working parents, working mothers in particular, it's just not going to be a good situation. And I just don't want to see those percentages fall through the floor when we're trying to get them to fire through the ceiling.
Exactly. And I think that was one amazing thing that did come out of COVID, is it proved that we could all work from home. We could be equally as productive, which is absolutely fantastic. And especially in tech, of course you can do your job. You need a laptop, and good internet. You can do it anywhere. So you don't need to be in the office, more than 3 days a week. So I agree. I think that's one thing that companies need to make sure that they don't go backwards. They continue to support women who want that flexibility piece, so they can sort of be, pick their children up, a couple of days a week. They don't have to put them in after school care 5 days a week and all of that and stuff. Yeah. And look, there also might be some women that, they want to do that, you know. Absolutely. Maybe they have, again, everyone's got different values and there's space for that as well. But I would say, you know, so I don't want to just brush women with one brush, but it's like, also, I think majority of females that we speak to still crave and want that flexibility to be the primary carer. And I think that needs to be prioritized. Because we were having a conversation just before we quickly move on with a client the other day, and they said to us, what do women want? And we said, flexibility. That is honestly what most women want that we speak to. They want to maintain that level of flexibility. So if you're a business right now and you're like, how can we attract more women? And you're not mandating your days in office, speak up about that, because that's a really good way how you can attract females. The next thing that obviously I would also just say as well is, you know, one, you could create internal, what are they called? RPOs, employee resource groups, That's the word I was looking for.
ERGs.
ERGs, that's right. ERGs, right?
Because that's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
ERGs.
Yeah, an ERG.
Employee resource groups. They are absolutely fantastic. Shout out to Mary Matthews at 7-Eleven. She's done a phenomenal job there with the women in tech that she's created.
Best way I've seen it done.
Outstanding. Well done, Mary. And I know you listen to this podcast, giving you a shout out there. But again, a primary example of what she's got. What they've done in that group, the safe space they've created, the women, the culture it's built in that sort of environment, absolutely hats off and fantastic. That's a really good thing that they can do. Giving your women opportunities to give back, to mentor or be mentored as well. So, you know, like encouraging your, maybe your senior females in your business to mentor the junior women in your business. Amazing opportunities to make sure that, you know, we're pulling up women and we're giving them opportunities and we're helping them learn and grow. And I think as well, just sort of doing like surveys and pulse checks to just sort of get a bit of a reading of what's actually going on.
Right? And you know what? They do a blind one as well.
Oh God, right. Yeah. No one wants to be like, you know, fully honest.
That's when you'll get the real, raw, honest feedback. So make sure that your surveys are blind. And you might even have a little bit of a chuckle about some of the stuff that comes through, because we have heard some fantastic stories about the results that came out of some surveys. But and when you take away, you know, when you strip it back, it just leaves a floor open for people to be so honest. And that is, you are getting a finger on the pulse of what your people are experiencing, what they're feeling. And then it's up to the executives and the leaders in the business to take heed and make relevant changes if you want to work on the retention of your existing
correct people. And that's ultimately it, isn't it? This is all going to come from the top anyway. So if you've got a great leadership team, a great stakeholder team that wants to sort of drive change in the business, this will happen. And hopefully this is something that companies are going to continue to take seriously as we move into 2025, as we continue to, well, we're going to need to encourage more people to enter the tech industry, to upskill in AI, to upskill in machine learning. And, you know, to if unless, otherwise, I'm quite concerned that Australia could fall behind. And we're going to have all of these people coming out of these jobs that are going to be going obsolete. We need to get them and encourage them to upskill into tech so we can make sure that the workforce here in Australia, in this amazing country that I feel privileged to call my home, continues to innovate, continues to, you know, be at the forefront of technology, because otherwise America, China, UK, the rest of the world is going to accelerate full steam ahead. And we're going to fall behind. And I do not want to see that happen. And if we can just encourage more people to get into tech and utilize the current workforce that we already have and mobilize it and encourage, especially the females as well, to come through and transition their skills into tech, we could have a thriving economy.
Yeah, there's a world of opportunity that awaits, like, and it's just about really demystifying like the complexities around like the entry point into these types of roles, and just standing up. But no one is going to drive your career forward in that direction but you.
Exactly.
So I really hope that there's some really little golden nuggets or things that you feel that we've potentially suggested that you can take away and implement. But implement it right away. Get it done. Don't falter. Don't halt. Don't wait. Go for it. Because it is such an exciting time. This next couple of years, I cannot wait to see what the tech landscape looks like in a couple of years, because I think it's going to move at a rate that I'm going to use the word, is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that we can imagine the world that we're about to step into over the next couple of years.
I know, I completely agree. And it's exciting. And I want everyone to be excited by it, but I also want everyone to be prepared for it as well. And it's all about creating a more sustainable industry that works for everyone, regardless of their background and their gender as well. So that is today's episode. Please reach out to Pam and I. We hang out a lot on LinkedIn. Let us know if you are a woman in tech right now, what you're upskilling in. If you are somebody brand new to tech, what's something you're going to be learning. If you are somebody working in an organization right now, you're a CTO, you're a CEO, you're a HR director, and you want to find out more about the services that we offer through Sisterhood Club and Seed Solutions, again, please reach out to us. But it's going to take a lot of people to make sure that we do drive this. We do make sure that the tech industry is inclusive for all. Let's not go backwards. Let's keep on moving forward. Let's keep on prioritizing D&I in the workplace, because that is how we're going to create change. And that's how we're going to make sure that Australia thrives, and also the rest of the world as well, and all of the businesses and the companies out there. So it's not just Australia, but obviously that's where we live and that's where we recruit. So that's hence why I mentioned that. But thank you so much for listening to today's episode, and please share this. And like I said, reach out to Pam and I. We love hearing from you, and have a great week ahead. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant, and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.